Hi, Wildcaster fans. Come check out The Point Being, the Arizona Daily Star's opinion page podcast. We talk about current events, what's going on in the world, the letters page, and more. So check us out at thepointbeingpodcast.com.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is The Wildcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Wildcast podcast. As always, I'm Justin Spears, joined here by Michael Lev and Ryan Finley. How's it going, guys?
It's good, man. I'm happy to be back in studio here. It seems like we've done a couple sort of out and about, and we're here. This is a home game for us. So very comfortable. Obviously, premature end to Arizona's football season, but I'm glad we get together to talk.
I'm still trying to recover from what happened on Saturday, honestly. And I feel like the fan base is probably feeling similarly, right? I mean, it was just a punch to the gut. About two and a half hours into that, you know, everyone's thinking, what bowl game are they going to go to? Like, what's the schedule going to be? Are they going to go to Vegas? Are they going to go to the Sun Bowl finally? And I wonder if the players were starting to think that too a little bit, or the coaches or whatever, because they kind of shut it down too early in that game and it ended up backfiring on them.
Right. And not to get too deep into the weeds here, Justin, can we talk about this game for a little bit?
Oh, absolutely. Totally. Okay.
I agree, Michael, there. And certainly play calling was a problem in this game. On the other hand, the turnovers, you know, I'm sort of going to side with Kevin Sumlin here. Yes. Arizona wins this game and maybe easily if they don't turn the ball over in their own zone twice. Including on a muffed exchange, which is like the most basic thing to get right. I think, not to excuse any of it away, but it was sort of a constellation of events where play calling was part of it, but not maybe all of it.
Well, in my job title here at the Arizona Daily Star, I monitor social media and what fans think, how they react. And a lot of them were always, or actually all of them, have said, well, this is all Kevin Sumlin's fault. This is the coaching staff's fault. Right. Where, like you said, Kevin Sumlin said, well, if we didn't have those two turnovers late in the game in your own end zone or on your own side of the field, this is a totally different game.
Sure. And they were fluky turnovers, too. I mean, the quarterback, Khalil Tate, panicking a little bit and kind of throwing it. Another one was, I mean, just a muffed point.
One was fluky.
Okay.
The fumble. One of them was a terrible decision by the quarterback. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. You got to manage the game better in that situation. Know where you are in the field, right? Mm-hmm. You have to know what the score is, what time of the game it is. And there were several other options that would have been better than what he did. Right. Throw it underneath. Throw it away. Run. Even if you don't get
take a sack and run the clock.
Even if you don't get a first down,
right.
40 yards difference in that situation, plus just the sort of emotional impact of that happening. The muffed exchange, I don't know why I didn't think of this earlier, was almost not quite on the same level, but Miracle at the Meadowlands with Herm Edwards. I mean, it's not quite, you know, game over, but man, just a complete worst case scenario. And, I mean, let's face it. I mean, ball handling was an issue for this Arizona team. I mean, the previous week against Washington State, that ball was on the ground half a dozen times. Mm-hmm. That stuff cannot happen.
Think about UCLA. They lose by a point, and J.J. Taylor was waltzing in the end zone. What happened right before that?
He got Leon Leaded.
I have such a hard time, like, just sort of figuring out, like, did J.J. Taylor just have, like, an all-time great season at Arizona, or – how much does he get knocked for all of these fumbles? Because the fumbles were a problem.
Yeah.
Well, he had a pretty successful season. He's a sophomore right now.
Redshirt sophomore.
But it was his third year with the program.
Third most rushing yards in school history.
And he was the only running back since like 2015 to rush for multiple 100-yard games, like three in a row or something like that. Like,
I mean, he had over 2,000 all-purpose yards. And we were talking before the podcast about, you know, the All-Pac-12 team, and I think he's got a good chance of making it as the all-purpose player on the first team. But, man, I mean, you got to protect the ball if you're a running back, period.
Is he on pace to finish? If he stayed 4 years, would he be Arizona's all-time leading rusher?
No.
I don't know what that math is.
Right. Don't ask three journalism guys to do math. And
I don't have the chart in front of me, but I mean, if he had like two more 1400 yard seasons, I mean, he'd probably have a pretty good shot at it. I don't know what the numbers are, and B, I don't know if he's going to stay here for two more years. I mean, maybe he will, maybe he won't. I don't know where he'd try to go pro, but you know, as a running back, you only have so many hits that you can take. Mm-hmm. Right.
But there aren't a whole lot of guys who look like him in the NFL.
No, there are not.
Darren Sproles is always
Tariq Cohen.
Tariq Cohen.
I don't think he's quite as quick and twitchy as Tariq Cohen is, you know, or doesn't have the straight line speed either. So it's tough. I mean, I could also see JJ Taylor having like a 10-year career in the CFL.
Right.
Right. Being like just a superstar up there in a more kind of wide open game.
Well, and I think that the evolution of the NFL, kind of what we're seeing now, starting with your team, Michael Lev, Chicago Bears. Are they your team? Oh, you're from Chicago.
Yeah,
they were my team at one point in time. But sure, go ahead.
But you have like the push broom mustache. No? Anyway. I don't know. Editor's note here, Michael Lev has never had facial hair of any kind.
I don't have a Ditka mustache. I have facial hair all the time, but I do not have a Ditka type mustache.
I think the evolution of the NFL from what we're seeing with the Chiefs now onto the Bears a little bit, it could lead to a renaissance for the smaller, faster man. You know, I mean, Tyreek Hill is not big. Tariq Cohen is not big. These are guys who – and they find ways to get them the ball in non-traditional ways. It may be that if J.J. Taylor stays two more years in Arizona, he could be entering an NFL that suddenly has a place for him.
I would agree. The one holdup I would have with that is just you need to be like sort of a 4-3-5, 4-4 guy, and he's probably more of a 4-5-5 guy. I mean, he got caught from behind, right, in that UCLA game that you referenced, Justin, and he talked about working on his speed coming into the season. It didn't happen often, but, you know, like – weird comparison, but like when Brandon Dawkins or Khalil Tate would break into the open field, they pretty much never got caught from behind. And they're a little taller, longer striders, you know. So I think that's going to be an impediment for him, but certainly a nice building block for the future. Mm. Running back position as a whole, very good group of players for Arizona.
And I think that we've criticized all your sort of overall quarterback play and how it is different, at least from preseason expectations. I think that we can all sort of agree that Taylor and the running backs really exceeded preseason expectations. And I would say that the wide receiver group did too. You look at somebody like a Sean Poindexter, I don't know if any of us ever saw that coming. He certainly had the NFL type body, but he had not been a consistent player. He finished the season, I would say, as good a receiver as there is in the league the last month of the season. He was very, very solid.
I would agree. I mean, 6 catches for 99 yards in the last game of the season, which is more than N'Keal Harry did. And, you know, N'Keal Harry faced a secondary that was lacking both of its starting corners and was missing one of its starting safeties in the first half of that game. Sean tied the school record for receiving touchdowns with 11 in a season. Unfortunately, I mean, that position with all those guys is going to have to be totally rebuilt from the ground up. So we kind of know the deal at running back, Justin. We kind of know the deal at wide receiver. Do we know the deal at quarterback?
That's a really good segue. I was gonna talk more about Sean Poindexter. I was going to ask you, when did he start playing football, Sean Poindexter? Well, I know he played at Centennial.
He did play in high school, but he was more of a volleyball player. I think he was like a 4-year volleyball player and a 2-year football player. Then he was going to go to Cal Baptist. That didn't pan out. He decided to like not go to school at all. He worked odd jobs, like he was a busboy. He worked for his stepdad as an electrician. He worked at a Cinnabon for like 2 years. 2 years he did this to like help out his family and stuff. And then he went to Glendale and played for 1 year of football and did really well. Mm-hmm. And then he came here and played for free.
Is it possible he started blossoming at the worst time? Kind of towards the end of his senior year, year at Arizona.
No, it's the best time.
For him, I mean, but for Arizona, I mean, they really could have used him at the start of the season.
They could have used a lot of things, I think, in the start of the season. They could have used a healthy quarterback, a consistent quarterback. I mean, I would say that a lot of Sean Poindexter's success is because the guy throwing him the football has gotten right, or at least more right than he was the first half of the season.
Yeah.
I think Khalil Tate has the physical tools to throw the ball downfield. Sean Poindexter, guess what? Pretty good at getting the ball or at getting downfield. You know, even that little jump ball for a touchdown on Saturday.
Incredible play.
I mean, yeah, but it took a good throw to put it right there. And I'm not sure that Khalil Tate was making those kinds of plays in weeks 1 through 7 of the season.
And Kevin Sumlin compared him to one of his former players, Mike Evans, at Texas A&M.
Right.
And when I saw that 50-50 ball for a touchdown, I was like, there's a comparison.
That's the Mike Evans.
That's right there.
I mean, can he do that against NFL defensive backs? You know, they're obviously the best of the best, but mm-hmm. he's 6'5". And
right.
He can jump.
Right.
So,
can we talk about Khalil Tate for a minute?
Of course. Okay. A minute. Several.
So, guys, there have been rumors that Khalil Tate is unhappy with his current position at Arizona. There's been some rumblings of friction between Noel Mazzone, offensive coordinator, and Khalil Tate. Mm-hmm. We really haven't discussed this or have reported on it just because it's all complete speculation at this point.
Right.
I mean, what do you guys make of this whole situation?
Well, we have reported this on it. And if I can say nice things about Michael Levin, his presence for a minute, we posted something late Monday night, basically saying that Kevin Sumlin and Khalil Tate met on Monday.
Talked. Not
sorry,
in person. They,
right, they talked on Monday, and that when they talked, Khalil Tate did not say that he planned to transfer. Kevin Sumlin did not say, we would like you to leave. That it was a productive sort of business as usual conversation between the two of them. Am I putting words in
your mouth? No, that's all correct. Yes.
And, you know, if you're to take anything from that, it's that their relationship right now is fine. The rumor out there, obviously, is that this is some sort of a it's Noel Mazzone or me situation from Khalil Tate, based on some friction that he's had with his position coach. I would look at this two ways. Number one, show me a football player who by the end of the season still gets along with his position coach. There probably aren't many. Number two, I think the optics of this, Arizona cannot pick Khalil Tate over Noel Mazzone if it comes to that.
No.
There's already, I think, the perception out there that Khalil Tate makes the coaching decisions. And I don't think that you could even allow a whisper of that publicly at this time of year. Michael, you're the guy with the sources and the insight on this.
It's a very interesting situation. I think there definitely has been friction between Khalil and Noel Mazzone, mm-hmm. And which doesn't mean that they couldn't continue to work together for another year, mm-hmm. right? I sort of view Kevin Sumlin in this whole equation as kind of the peace broker between them, who's you might go to Khalil and be like, look, the best option for you. Again, this is not anything that has been said. I'm just sort of speculating about what the thought process might be or the mm-hmm. conversation might be. He conceivably could go to Khalil and say, you know what, the best option for you is to come back here, spend another whole offseason in the same system, look at your numbers that you were able to put up despite the injury, despite adapting to a new system. I mean, everyone talked about how terrible things were. He threw 26 touchdown passes right. and 7 interceptions.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. I sound like Kevin Sumlin, right? right? So you do that, right? And let me talk to Noel, right? And so Kevin talks to Noel and be like, look, I know that things didn't go exactly the way that we hoped, right? Mm-hmm. But we've got a super talented guy here. He's willing to make it work. Let's try to figure out a middle ground where all parties can be satisfied. Mm-hmm. Let's tweak the offense a little bit more to blend some of the RPO stuff with what you want to do. We'll bring in your young quarterback in Grant Gunnell, who could redshirt this first year, and then he can be the guy for the 4 years after that.
I look at it like this. When Khalil first came to Arizona, his guy was Rod Smith. Mm-hmm. He was the quarterback's coach, co-offense coordinator. That was his guy. Did he get the offense right away? No. I mean, I get it. He was also 17 years old, but it took him some time, a couple years, to get used to the offense. This was a whole new learning experience for him, again, with learning the offense with Noel Mazzone. Maybe this year was 17-year-old Khalil, and then you go into next year when you know the offense and you understand it, you have experience in it. Maybe this is the year where Khalil Tate can finally flourish.
Well, and we can talk about maturity, too. I think that with Tate, you would hope that at this point next year he will have grown, sort of both in terms of his knowledge of the offense and of the game, but also in terms of just kind of the way he carries himself. I mean, I remember myself at age 20, and I remember myself at age, say, 23 or 22. There's big growth there. And I think that if there's an area in which we can be critical of Khalil Tate this year, I think is that there are some things that you could blame on immaturity. whether that sort of snippiness post game. And you witnessed some of that firsthand, Michael.
I sure did.
A couple of occasions.
Firsthand. Emphasis on firsthand.
Firsthand. Or maybe a stubbornness or reluctance to run when they said, don't run so much. So he didn't run at all. I think that, it's possible that Tate could mature here in the next 6 months too. And, I mean, if everything comes together, Michael Lev, this guy can still be a really special football player.
He can, and he showed that in flashes. I mean, another conversation that I think Kevin Sumlin needs to have with Khalil Tate is like, look, if you're going to come back here and be the guy, you really need to understand what all of the responsibilities are mm-hmm. that come with that title, mm-hmm. right? That means that you can't be pouty mm-hmm. on the sideline. You can't be obstinate in post-game press conferences. You have to answer the questions. You got to take accountability and responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's just not a good look. And he has to tell him, you're only hurting yourself.
Right.
Right. The NFL is watching your every move. Okay. I mean, if you think it's tough here in Tucson, what's it going to be like in any NFL market? It's way more scrutiny, more reporters, more hard questions. You're not doing yourself any favors. So that is something for you secondarily to work on besides all the football stuff.
And in fairness, I think when media talks about media, some people tune out. But in fairness, it's not as if you were asking him the unexpected hard question. One could make the argument, hey, what were you thinking on that interception is not a hard question. It's a tell me about your thought process.
Take us through it.
Talk about. It's the, the talk. Don't you hate talk about? That's how bad reporters start talk about this. But, they weren't even difficult by sports writer standard questions. They were, hey, he's talking about the future. And you jump in, Michael, and you go, well, are you going to be a part of that future? I mean, that's not an unfair or difficult question. I didn't think.
It's a yes or no question, actually.
Or it's a I haven't thought about it yet. Or I'm going to sit down with my family and my coaches after the season and discuss my options.
Right.
But then if you do the Drew Rosenhaus thing and just go next question, mm-hmm. Then it becomes a soundbite, right? Mm-hmm. And it sort of, takes a negative connotation.
Creates drama.
But what's weird though is like when rumors started swirling about, let's say Monday, mm-hmm. that he might transfer, and it kind of took on a life of its own.
Well, there have been rumors out there for a month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on social media especially, it mm-hmm. seemed like I would say 95% of the people said Noel Mazzone and Kevin Sumlin ruined Khalil Tate.
Right.
No.
Well, how did these guys look at Kevin, look at all the quarterbacks that Kevin Sumlin ran off at Texas A&M, Noel Mazzone can't coach a running quarterback. What did they do to Khalil Tate? Of course, any school like Illinois, for example, would love to have someone like Khalil Tate parachute in for 1 year. It could probably get them three or four extra wins just based on his athleticism alone. But I just think that narrative is completely misguided. Right. This idea that Noel Mazzone and Kevin Sumlin would take Khalil Tate and say, you know what? You're the most gifted running quarterback in college football, but we don't want you to run anymore at all. We just want you to stand in the pocket like 40-year-old Peyton Manning and sling the ball around.
Right.
It's preposterous. Right. The other part of it is, and I tweeted this out yesterday, Khalil Tate wanted to become a better pocket passer,
right? Because he wants to play in the NFL, and there's a belief that you got to do that to play in the NFL.
He did not – he pretty strongly stated his distaste or his disdain for someone like Kenny Amatalolo coming here and running an option-type offense.
Right.
Stated it on Twitter. I did not come here to run the triple option.
Right.
Right? He wants to become an NFL quarterback.
He came here to run the read option, not the triple option.
Right. Somewhat it's semantics to a degree.
Right.
But this idea that it's like Sumlin and Mazzone told him not to run or ordered him not to run or structured an offense that would have no quarterback running in it makes no sense. And I don't understand how that became such a thing.
It would be as if somebody said Sean Miller told DeAndre Ayton to only shoot three-pointers. Right?
You got a good post game, but if you want to be able to play in the NBA, you got to be able to shoot.
Right, and that's not the case, right? DeAndre Ayton's 7 feet tall. Khalil Tate, his biggest strength was his running ability and his ability to make people miss in space. There's no reason for them to say, don't do that. You'd have to be completely
Now, was the game plan for BYU maybe a little bit misguided?
Right.
I would say yes.
Right.
Okay? Not enough design runs. Now, you do have to put that in the context of BYU played a junk defense.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they played a spy.
Mm-hmm.
They took their best defensive end, and he stood up behind the line of scrimmage and monitored, like...
Was that the 6'9" dude?
Yes.
Kafusi,
yeah. Yes. Super big, long, athletic
right.
guy. And, you know, you're definitely going to face some adjustments from defenses based on what Khalil did last year. So then you go into the next week and you say, all right, Kevin, someone said it. We're going to use his legs more. And then like the second play from scrimmage, he twists his ankle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. A lot of debate throughout the course of the season, including on our own podcast, about the severity of that injury.
Mm-hmm.
Like, was it a real injury? How bad was it? If it was so bad, why is he still out there, et cetera?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the same source who told me about the conversation between Khalil and Kevin Sumlin made the point that with an athlete of Khalil's caliber, it's almost like a world-class sprinter,
mm-hmm.
right? The slightest muscle injury, hamstring, quad, whatever, like that's going to affect you in a way that it wouldn't affect someone like Philip Rivers, who could play on right. a torn ACL in a playoff game, right? He's just standing in the pocket, kind of slinging the ball around anyway, right?
He didn't win that playoff game, by the way.
Right.
Broke my heart.
But he still played in it, okay?
Right.
Whereas someone like Khalil Tate, who's used to feeling a certain way and being able to do certain things, and all of a sudden he's sort of like, I can't do those. I don't feel right. I can't do the things I'm used to doing. I think that was a bigger factor than maybe people realize.
Well, and it's, I mean, Justin, you must have heard this. You played high school football. I played 2 years of bad high school football. I mean, there's a difference between pain and discomfort. There's a difference
yeah.
between pain and an injury, mm-hmm. right? And with Tate, I mean, this may be one of the first times in his career he felt legitimately hurt, right? I mean, physically. He had that shoulder issue last year. But, you know, for him, it may have just been an adjustment period. And again, he's young. We forget sometimes that he's 20 years old. And I don't know. Maybe I feel like I'm giving him a little bit too much of the benefit of the doubt. But we're ignoring, I think, the biggest issue and the biggest question here, Michael. Khalil Tate's graduation status. Khalil Tate can play for any team in the country. He can play for Chip Kelly at UCLA. He can play for Nick Saban at Bama. He can play anywhere he wants if he graduates in May. If he doesn't graduate in May and wants to go play in another Division I school, he's going to have to sit out a year, and then all of a sudden we're talking about him playing in 2020 as a 22-year-old senior, right? We don't know if he is on pace to graduate or not. He enrolled early, so it would be a 3.5-year graduation. Do you think that will dictate his decision?
I think it's certainly a factor,
right?
I mean, if you're him, I mean, is it worth it to transfer to another school and sit out a whole year? I mean,
right.
Is that something you want to do
mm-hmm.
at this point in your college career? I mean, heading into your senior year, that's kind of a tough pill to swallow,
right?
So let's say that that's not on the table,
mm-hmm.
right? Do you go somewhere else?
I don't
know. I mean, what are the other options? The other option is stay here,
mm-hmm.
okay? Make it work. I already have some grasp of the system. I'll have a better grasp of the system
mm-hmm.
Next year. Kevin Sumlin is on my side,
mm-hmm.
right? I've got a big advocate in the head coach. There's not really a legitimate competition for my spot,
mm-hmm.
although I don't think it would hurt to have him be pushed a little bit by
saying
we're
better.
Opening it up
it's
or whatever.
It's going to be a crowded quarterback room next year.
But he's going to be
there's going to be a lot. There's going to be a lot of guys.
I will bet you a lunch that at least one of the guys who's on the team right now won't be next year, and maybe two of them, because you know how things go with quarterbacks.
Yeah,
guys will transfer. It's a very active and robust transfer market. The other option, the one that we haven't talked about yet, is like he could try to go into the NFL,
mm-hmm.
Which I personally think would not be a wise decision on his part, because he's nowhere near ready as a quarterback
mm-hmm.
To play in the league. I mean, you can be the best athlete in the world, and Lamar Jackson's kind of getting it done a little bit right now for Baltimore, but we've seen guys like this who the league adjusts to them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can't get away with a lot of the stuff that you can get away with. You have to be able to read defenses. You have to be able to find check down receivers. all of those things. Khalil, I don't want to say he regressed in that area, but he didn't make enough progress in that area this season for me to say, you know what, this guy's NFL ready or close to NFL ready, or someone's going to gamble on his athleticism.
Not at the position of quarterback. Right. I think any other skill position in the NFL, you'd maybe look past some scheme recognition problems for an athlete of Khalil Tate's caliber, right? If he was a cornerback, if he was a wide receiver, I mean, somebody like Darius Heyward-Bey, you know, I just think of guys who were just athletic freaks but not really good college players who got drafted. Al Davis, for, what, a generation, drafted unaccomplished college guys with great skills. Khalil Tate, though, at quarterback, I mean, you have to show that you can do it. And I'm not sure he's shown anything outside of sort of loud tools. You know, it's a baseball term, but, you know, loud tools. Shoot, on Saturday, guys, he uncorked a pass 70 yards in the air. 71. If that ball is caught, and it wasn't caught because he overthrew a receiver who was 68 yards down the field. Mm-hmm. If that ball is caught, it goes down to me behind maybe the Chuck Cecil play as the greatest single play in Arizona football history.
Wow.
No, he's right. Think about it.
If he catches that football.
With the game
all
the stuff
online. That happened, winning touchdown pass of like 80 yards or whatever it would have been.
On a rope 70 yards downfield. There aren't many quarterbacks in college football right now who can get the ball there. Right,
I mean, that's like Patrick Mahomes type stuff.
Right.
So if Khalil wants to be a quarterback, mm-hmm. to me, he has to play another year of college, whether it's here or elsewhere.
Right.
I mean, if he's like, you know what, Terrell Pryor, he became a wide receiver. Braxton Miller became a wide receiver. I don't know if he wants to do that.
But he can throw the ball 73 yards in the air. He shouldn't. He should be a quarterback.
If he doesn't want to do that, then, you know, the move is not to go to the NFL. Mm-hmm. And I'm also convinced if they get one of those evaluations from the NFL – it's not going to say first round or second round on it.
No.
And it's a total crapshoot at that point.
All right, guys.
Yeah.
We talked a lot about Khalil Tate. Mm-hmm. Let's go to postseason honors mm-hmm. for these Arizona Wildcats. We have a lot of categories. Uh-huh. I want you guys to break it down for us, all right?
Okay. So these are superlatives?
Superlatives.
Superlatives.
I always say superlatives.
How do you say that word?
Superlatives. Superlatives. I've always said superlatives. Ever since I was a little kid. I don't know why. It was just like I could never pronounce Albuquerque right. I didn't pronounce Albuquerque right until I was like 11 years old.
Just nailed it right there.
I always said apple cookie.
That's awesome.
All right. So who is the position coach of the year for Arizona? Michael Lev, we'll start with you.
Yeah, it's a no-brainer to me. It's Joe Gilbert, the offensive line coach who came into a situation where, you know, you thought, hey, we've got a returning center and Nathan Eldridge who started for 2 years. You know, this can be kind of the anchor, the foundation of our offensive line. Mm-hmm. Has a knee injury, can't practice, can't play, out for the season. We bring in a guy from Texas A&M, Robert Congell. Oh, he can be our center. We can't get him eligible because he played in 4 games last year. Leif Freck, we know he's going to miss the first 2 games, but once he comes back, things will be great. Injures his ankle in the first game back. Against Oregon State, and then is kind of in and out of the lineup, not necessarily quite right the whole year. What you're left with at the end of the day is one player in Cody Creason who had, I think, 7 career starts in college football. And they ended up, I think they lead the league in rushing, right? And it's not like they gave up a gazillion sacks either. I think he's borderline miracle worker with that offensive line. So that would be my choice.
I would go with Iona. Iona Ungalale.
Just call him Coach Iona.
Coach Iona. For a couple of reasons, not all of them are on field things, but, you know, Arizona. Michael, we've been watching this team a long time, or this program a long time, and I'm not sure Arizona had ever had too many big boys up front who were difference makers. Especially under Rich Rod. I mean, that was sort of the missing piece for him for 6 years. I thought Arizona finally had defensive tackles who could play. Guys who took up space. War daddies, as they call them, right? P.J. Johnson, somebody who I think was just a revelation of a player and could be a team-changing type guy if he can get a 6-year of eligibility. Derek Bowles is a guy who came back and I thought played fairly well this year. I thought that, you know, this line – to me, was a big question mark heading into the season, and they not only developed in season, but I think really shined. Then you look at the impact Iona's had off the field in terms of recruiting. Arizona received a verbal commitment yesterday from a guy at Eastern Arizona College in Thatcher. He's of Polynesian descent. He came here just like a lot of other guys in that class because of sort of the developing feel for that element of recruiting that Iona brings. Mm. He's well connected both in California and in the junior colleges and among Polynesian players. He is the assistant coach they need right now. Mm. And I think he did a very good job. He didn't do more with less like Joe Gilbert did. I don't think Joe Gilbert certainly in terms of X's and O's, I think did a wonderful job. But for what he brings in recruiting in terms of kind of culture change, so to speak, I think Iona's a big hire and he did a great job.
I agree with you. I'm on board with Iona just because Joe Gilbert did a fantastic job, but there was a handful of guys where you looked at them and said they could be something like Theo Lacusa, mm-hmm. or even a guy like Michael Elatise.
Sure.
Where that defensive line, how many guys got hurt? Mm-hmm. Derek Bowles was dinged up a little bit throughout the year. They lost Justin Belknap to the year. And then they made the transition for JB Brown to go from linebacker to defensive end, mm-hmm. and he flourished there. Mm-hmm. Jalen Harris, son of Sean Harris. We did not know what he was going to be.
Is there anybody on their roster who looks better in a uniform than Jalen Harris? Oh my God! I mean, this—he
thrived, but he thrived under Iona,
right?
And the way he mixed the linemen around with guys like PJ Johnson, Derek Bowles, JB Brown, Jalen Harris, like they found a nice blend of guys. And yeah, I think that all goes to what Iona is trying to establish here, and then also the recruiting aspect. Mm-hmm. They're getting some guys up front. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at their most recent commits now. While they are junior college guys, being they're experienced,
right.
and they're getting Miles Tapasua is his name from Eastern Arizona.
Of course, yes.
Him getting Iona getting him, that's a big time commit. So I agree with you. I'm on board with Iona. All right, Michael. Now up to you. Who was the defensive MVP for Arizona this season?
Yeah, that's easy. It's got to be
Colin Schooler,
right? Led the team. I don't know if he ended up leading the league. I think he did end up leading the league in tackles mm-hmm. for losses among the national leaders. Led the team in tackles. Led the team, period. He's a foundational piece. I think he's going to be an all-league performer. He's the quarterback of defense. Now, all that being said, I think there are some areas that he can stand to improve a little bit, like mm-hmm. lateral mobility and quickness. Kind of sneaky play in that game that people forget because it happened toward the end of the third quarter, but there was a 4th-and-8 that ASU converted on a scramble by Manny Wilkins, and it was a one-on-one situation with him and Colin Schooler in the open field, and Manny was able to get around him. I mean, if they make that play, the fourth quarter might have unfolded completely differently because it would have been a stop, and they wouldn't have gotten the field goal. They still would have been down 19. Then again, I mean, Arizona might have gone into the 4-minute offense in the third quarter, which would have been really crazy. But you know, areas that he can improve, of course, but he's always around the ball. He's the biggest playmaker on the defense. I don't see how you could name anybody else. Maybe there's a case for one other guy. Well, here's Ryan.
PJ Johnson?
Yeah.
Yeah, there we go. I mean, he's the only other guy in the conversation, I think. To me, Schooler is their best defensive player, but PJ Johnson, I think, was probably the most surprising / impressive performer that they had this year. He's a great story. I mean, a guy who started off at Sacramento State, transferred to San Francisco City College, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And ended up at Arizona. A guy who, you know, throughout the year was listed kind of as a fifth-year senior, Michael Love, I'm looking at you. Yes.
Well, he was listed as a redshirt junior,
right?
But he's in his fifth year of college because he actually redshirted 2 of his 3 years at Sac State.
Right, because a really ugly leg injury he had, right?
He had some serious health problems.
Right.
Yeah, he had a burst appendix also while he was there.
So. Yeah, and he's somebody who I think has developed really into an NFL prospect playing in Arizona. And, you know, it's the jury is still out as to whether or not he'll pursue a 6th year. He would need an NCAA waiver to do that. I think if he comes back, all of a sudden you're building your defense around 2 guys in Schooler and him who could be all-league type performers and future NFL players. Suddenly that defense doesn't look so bad. Mm-hmm. So P.J. Johnson would get my vote.
You guys took the words right out of my mouth. Colin Schooler won, and if there's anybody that can make a case for it, it's a guy like P.J. Johnson.
Right.
Now on the offensive side of the ball, who was MVP? Because I can guarantee you neither of you are going to choose Khalil Tate.
I wouldn't choose Khalil just because the expectations were so high for him.
Right.
Right.
He didn't have a bad year by any stretch.
No. Right. No. If this was his first year as a starter and we didn't know anything about him and he hadn't done what he had done in 2017, you would have said, wow, like how promising this guy is. But when you rush for 1,400 yards the previous year and you win four consecutive Pac-12 Offensive Player of the Week awards.
And Sports Illustrated says, book it, Khalil Tate's the Heisman Trophy winner.
Yeah. That didn't turn out to be a positive for him. You could make a case for Sean Poindexter, I would say, but I don't think quite enough volume. So I'm going to go with J.J. Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the fumbles, which were an issue, led the team in rushing, I think third or fourth most rushing yards in a single season in Arizona history. When they were at their best, they were featuring J.J. He's also a great blocker, by the way. Great at blitz pickup, good receiver, great all-around player. I loved how hard he ran in that ASU game. Like he finished he was finishing runs like Walter Payton.
Lowering his shoulder.
Putting his shoulder down. he was very determined, and I feel bad for him that exchange happened, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say who's at fault. I asked the question and didn't really get any sort of a clarity on it whatsoever. But JJ would get my vote regardless of what happened in that last sequence there.
Yeah, 10 minutes ago you weren't a Chicago Bears fan. Now you're mentioning Walter Payton, but no, that's okay. to me, it's Sean Poindexter for the same reason and rationale I just used on P.J. Johnson. Sean Poindexter, I think, was a very pleasant surprise. I think like P.J. Johnson, he has an NFL body. And it's finally sort of his game has caught up to that a little bit. I shudder to think where this passing offense would be without him. Really, he was their only big receiver of note this year. I mean, they didn't use a tight end. I mean, that's right. I mean, they can tell us they did. But they didn't. they didn't really use the tight end. Sean Brown and Tony Ellison are little guys. To me, Sean Poindexter was the most surprising player and to me the most impressive player. J.J. Taylor, I think that there's enough, there was enough of a book on him before the season that we knew what we were going to get. Very impressed with the way Poindexter played.
Kevin Sumlin said after the ASU game, there were a few constants this season. One of them, J.J. Taylor, you got Colin Schooler. And another one that he mentioned was a center by the name of Josh McCauley.
Oh, Justin Spears is going to talk up the center. Shocking. What position did you play in the
center? Center. Okay. I gotta hold it down for our guys. we don't get a lot of love. But no, I mean, you look at Josh McCauley this year, a walk-on, and was a starter throughout the year, never really got injured, was introduced nationally with a little thump on Ed Oliver's helmet. And I thought for what he brought to Arizona's offensive line this year, I thought he did great. And when you have your head coach sitting on the podium after a game saying there were constants throughout the year, not too many coaches, or at least from what I've heard, would actually say, oh, yeah, our center has been a constant this year.
Well, that's the old cliche, right? Is if you're an offensive lineman, the only time you get your name mentioned is when you screw up.
Yeah.
That's the one time when you get your name mentioned and you haven't screwed up.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good call, a very under the radar pick. And again, emblematic of this offensive line.
Absolutely.
Which probably didn't look like much at the start of the season, but really developed into an area of strength.
Walk on of the year.
Is he?
Right.
He's still a walk on.
Give that man a scholarship.
I think, I don't have the chart in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he's the only offensive lineman who started at the same position every game.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
All year, right? Because Leif missed three games. Donovan Lai was moving from left to right. Creason was moving from right tackle to left guard. Bryson Cain started out as the right guard and then he got injured. So I'm 99.9% sure that McCauley was the only guy on the offensive line to start at the same position for the entire year. I brought this up heading into the Washington State game. Their entire offensive line played the same position in every game the entire year. That makes a big difference, having that level of continuity. Certainly something to strive for next season if you're Arizona.
Real quick, one more category, guys.
Okay.
Newcomer of the year. I know there's been a lot of players that have played this year that got some playing time last year, but this year they've had a bigger role. When you look back on the players that really entered the scene for Arizona this year, and it could even be a graduate transfer that only played 1 year at Arizona. Who are you looking at?
Probably PJ Johnson, right?
Yeah.
You mentioned earlier. We went over his contributions already, so let's try to think of somebody else. Dylan Klump?
That's my pick.
I mean, he had a
pretty good
year as a punter. I thought he had a really good game in this last game. And if they had actually ended up winning the game, we would have probably talked about that great punt he had early in the third quarter, you know, the one where Troy Young stopped N'Keal Harry for a five-yard loss. I mean, that was a 62-yard change in field position on that play. They had some promising freshmen, too, like Christian Young, as one example. Bam Smith didn't play that much, but I'm telling you, he looked good in those brief instances where he was out there, and I think he's a future starter at this school who's going to have a really big year at some point. No one else really springs to mind besides those guys. I think PJ is kind of the runaway winner in that category.
Yeah.
You just brought up Dylan Klump's name so we can mention a nickname that he probably doesn't have but should have.
Klump Thump?
No. Is he the Nutty Professor?
No.
No. Anyway, that's all I got. Sorry.
Oh, man. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast.
Well done, Ryan.
Moving ahead football-wise, we have National Signing Day coming up here pretty soon. Arizona's reeling in a lot of junior college recruits, other high school prospects, hitting the Texas market hard. Mm-hmm. I mean, when you look at the recruiting class, I mean, you would say that they've essentially checked off all the boxes what they wanted to do.
These are the boxes we talked about a year ago. I mean, before we knew who Kevin Sumlin was, or we knew Kevin Sumlin was coming here, we talked about, hey, you need to get bigger on the lines. You need to bring in some junior college guys. I think it's a bad policy to recruit junior college guys exclusively, but there are years when you need guys, right? And I think that the Polynesian thing, don't underestimate the importance of creating that, that connection to that community, because you are going to be able to get offensive linemen and defensive linemen coming out of it. And again, that's why it's been so important that they've established recruiting in Texas. And again, among not only guys from the islands, but Polynesian guys living in the United States. It's huge. It's huge.
Michael Lev, what's next for you football-wise? Are you going to take some time off?
Big Ten championship game on Saturday. Start there.
That's true.
Northwestern.
Weekend of college football. Starting with the Pac-12 championship Friday night, which doesn't have a lot of buzz, unfortunately, but it's actually a pretty good game between Washington and Utah. And the winner gets to go to the Rose Bowl, which is pretty cool. But I'm going to monitor a lot of these personnel and coaching situations. The Khalil Tate deal still kind of up in the air. I mean, I definitely reported on Monday that they hadn't talked about transferring, but that doesn't mean it's not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We also don't know what PJ Johnson's status is going to be. Jace Whitaker is another really important piece of this whole equation. If he decides to come back here next year, now his dad told me that he is going to graduate in December, so he could be a grad transfer and go anywhere else, but I don't really know if he's got any sort of great loyal, you know, if there's some school that he feels like an affinity with. Maybe San Diego State, like his brother played there. He's from Oceanside, so I think it's possible, but man, it would be, if you get a PJ Johnson and Jace Whitaker returning to the defense next year,
it's huge.
That would be nice. And also monitoring some of these potential coaching situations. We don't know if Marcel Yates is going to be back as defensive coordinator. And when all these coaching changes happen, like people, there's a domino effect, right? Mm-hmm. Like someone who you never think might leave because his best friend got hired somewhere else or whatever.
Well, it was Arizona's O-line coach last year. What's his name?
Garen Justice.
No, before
him. Oh.
The other O-line coach,
Jim Mahalchek,
gets a chance to go back to Oregon State because he likes the new coach, and all of a sudden he's gone there.
Yeah. So I'll be monitoring all that sort of stuff, and then I'll jump in on the Arizona Bowl here at the end of the month, which will feature Arkansas State against
ASU
against a Mountain West team to be determined.
To be determined. Quick question: If Jeff Brohm, the Purdue coach, goes to Louisville, and that's the rumor, would Purdue kick the tires on former football star and graduate Kevin Sumlin? I know the buyout's insane, but
I mean, maybe they would. I don't know. I don't know if that appeals to him. And we were talking about this before the show. I don't think Purdue is a better job than Arizona,
right?
Because you're in the Big Ten East, and you've got Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and Michigan State to contend with. Whereas here at Arizona, you know, all due respect to Utah, I mean, I think it's sort of the program that Arizona should aspire to be, but the kings of the division, the ones who are always getting the best players are USC and UCLA. That's two teams. That's not four.
Right.
So I think weather-wise, you know, this is way more appealing. I think the Texas kids would probably be more inclined to come here than Purdue. I thought maybe Mike Leach would be an interesting option for Purdue if Brohm left. I mean, people are speculating a lot about Leach maybe moving on to a different job. And I think that that would be a good fit because you kind of bring that offense into the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you can kind of shake things up sort of and win some ball games there that you might otherwise not be able to just because of your system.
Pullman's not better than a lot of places. Pullman is Paris compared to West Lafayette, Indiana.
Wow, Ryan.
Anyway.
Besides, what?
Ryan loves Pullman.
I do. Pullman's great. Why? I like comparing places and saying something is Paris compared to somewhere else. Yes.
Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter. Like us on Facebook and also give us a follow on Instagram. We're on Instagram as well. And don't forget to subscribe to the pod on Apple Podcasts and download the Wildcaster app. It's available on the App Store and Google Play. For Michael, for Ryan, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.